Airports open.
Now presenting. Cause and Creation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cause and Creation. I'm Megan Martin, here with the incredible Janelle Megan. Say hi to everyone,
hi,
Janelle.
Hi, everyone.
And, okay, so we have a beautiful, incredibly inspiring interview for you today. But before we get into that, we're going to go through our own inspirations for the week. And I also just wanted to give a couple shout-outs to the other shows on the network. And I wanted to say thank you for listening to our Patreon sneak peek. There's more to come there. And so we are really, really excited to have you along for that journey with us. And while you're waiting on that, Avon Plays is doing some new episodes with Ben Wallace's campaign for masks. It's really, really great. It's an actual play campaign that's a little more superhero than D&D. Super cool. Krasemski is running our new Bards and Bourbon D&D things, and I'm actually in that one. I'm basically playing like a boy Rapunzel who spent 20 years in a tower reading nothing but Emily Post. It's a really, really great time for sex and relationships. You can go check out Wine Dine in 69 for horror. Definitely go check out Weeping Cedars. It's a total hit. And check us out on Twitch. Avon is doing streaming now. I think we're gearing up to be streaming every night of the week. We just did a whole episode last night on WandaVision, and it was so much fun to talk about, and they're doing another RPG on Saturdays. So lots of exciting stuff, so definitely check it out.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. I'm really, really excited and, like, just happy to be a part of this network that, like, is just so full of so many creative and incredibly talented people.
Oh, 100%. And also, I can't say enough, and this, Janelle, this goes for you too. Everyone needs to watch WandaVision. It is such an incredible show. I'm not going to spend my, like, inspiration on it, but oh my god, it's a good show.
I still remember, I forget what we were talking about, but I was like, yeah, it's not like I care about WandaVision, and you were just like, a long pause, and we're just like, well, I care about WandaVision.
Like, I'm actually going to say, like, if you are just a fan of, like, television, like, good shows, I almost don't even think you need to know anything about Marvel to really get into this. It's honestly, it's just, like, Elizabeth Olsen dealing with grief and, like, an exploration of, like, the growth of, like, film over the decades. And it's beautiful.
But is it, like, super so, we don't have to talk about it the whole time, but, like, that's, I'm just curious.
No, it is. I mean, like, it's definitely integrated, but there is enough of a disconnect that I honestly don't even think you need to care about superheroes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm a little burnt out for the superhero stuff, so that's why I avoided it. But the fact that the really intrigued me what you said about, like, the exploration of film. Now I'm definitely intrigued. And I still have my Disney Plus subscription from, like, when I was just on, like, a big, like, Disney rewatch journey. So I could watch it. It's Disney Plus, right?
Yeah. No, like I said, I'm not, like, doing my artist aid on it because we could literally do, maybe if you guys are interested in a Patreon episode from us talking about it, like, I would be super down.
That would force me to watch it, so if you want me to watch it, listeners,
I can't recommend it enough. Like, I would need an hour to, like, really explore everything going on in that. Because, I mean, it's just good television.
Okay. I'm not roasting it. It's more of just me being a little burnt out about the superhero stuff. I'm sure it's great. I mean, people don't always hype things up that are bad. I usually always regret watching things late. So, I'll definitely consider watching it.
Fair. Oh, and... on the subject of, you know, if there's anything that you want to hear from us, please email us, causingcreationpodcast@gmail.com. And we're starting our inspiration inboxes now, so we would love to hear from you about things that inspire you, good things that happen to you. Send me pictures of cats. Send us movies that you've watched. Shout out into the ether about things. Like, just please email us, and we would love to feature it on the show.
Yeah, we definitely want to hear from you. I want to know everything you're watching and reading and all of that, because I do love getting recommendations. I genuinely do.
And speaking of inspirations, ooh, Janelle, what inspired you that lately?
That transition.
We're getting good at this. We're like professionals.
So my inspiration is kind of twofold. So I recently went to, not recently, I guess a few weeks ago, I went to Tulum. And while I was there, I had my first experience ziplining. And I feel like everybody has already gone ziplining when they were a kid or even when they were a teenager. But, like, I am not a extreme sports, living on the edge type of person. Like, I have my courageous, brave, adventurous side, obviously, but it's not in the physical, putting my body through physical things way. So I never have done it before. And I did it, and it was a great experience. I was terrified the whole time, and there's this really funny video of me doing it, and, like, immediately before I go, the first thing I say is, like, what everybody says before they're about to go ziplining: I'm not gonna fall out, am I? Like, the most, like, cliche thing ever. The guy's just laughing at me. So I
would say the same
thing. Yeah, so, oh, have you ever done it, Megan?
Okay, so I did once, and I really love that you were bringing that up. Can I tell you how I am, like, also, like, very afraid of, like, physical things like that, and literally the only way that I can get through them is, like, I guess a little self-deprecating, but it's literally just me telling myself, like, Megan, like, 10 people have done this before you. Why do you think you're so special that you're going to break it?
No, that's helpful. Although I will disagree. I think you are more, you're definitely more sporty and physical than me, because you ski. And, like, you do, like, outdoorsy stuff. Like, I feel like you're a little bit more in that adventurous realm than I am. I don't know. Maybe you could speak for yourself on that for sure. But I think of you as somebody who's, like, athletic. You know what I mean? Like, isn't afraid to, like, do some of those types of stuff.
Oh, no, that's very, very sweet. I will say, like, even, like, as far as, like, skiing goes, like, I am still doing, like, bare minimum, very safe levels of it. I'm not trying to, like, break
but
any
you just
bones.
Went down.
I've never broken a bone, and I would like to end up in my coffin without breaking
bones.
But
didn't you just tell me you just went down the Black Diamond?
Okay, I did, but literally the only reason I went down a Black Diamond was because I psyched myself up for it, and I got to the top of it, and I was like, I'm not doing that. And one of the guys that I was skiing with was like, well, it's a really long walk back if you don't. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm lazier than I am afraid.
I mean, sometimes that's what it takes. Sometimes it's about being lazier than you are afraid. But yes.
But only, tell us about it. Actually, and also maybe, like, I guess kind of, like, explain ziplining a little bit, too, just in case, like, people haven't experienced
it. Oh, yeah,
it.
I mean, I don't know how to really explain it, other than it's not a string. Oh, my God. Why are you having me explain this, Megan? Like, I don't know the mechanics of ziplining. I don't know how it works.
Oh, I just meant, like, the general, like, what is it?
I don't know. This is what I know about it. I sat in a, like, floating chair, and I flew across a body of water. Like, that's literally all I really know about it. On, like, a zip line. Like, I don't know how to describe it.
That's
so that's what happened to me.
Okay, I do want to say, like, you are underselling it. It is not a floating chair. You are going very quickly when you're ziplining.
I will say it's, like, I'm going very quickly, but it's not as fast as I thought it was, so that's why it feels just like, I had built it up in my head that I was gonna zoom, and it was not the case at all. It was a nice stroll through the air. But anyway, okay. All that to say, I went ziplining for the first time in my life, and it got me thinking of just how afraid I am of things, I guess, and how I don't always force myself to do them. for the most part, like, I've lived a lot of my life. If I'm afraid to do something, I find a way out of it, or I find a way around it, or, like, pretty much my entire life has been sneaking out of things I don't want to do, which is a valid skill, I will say, for certain things in my life, but it hasn't served me the best, I'm realizing. So I got to thinking about just fear and, like, being uncomfortable and, like, kind of just building more of a resilience to those types of experiences. I came across this book. Mm-hmm. It's called How to Be Comfortable with Being Uncomfortable, 43 Weird and Wonderful Ways to Build a Strong, Resilient Mindset by Ben Aldridge. And I started to read it, and it's a very interesting book with all of this guy. He had a certain experience where he wanted to get more brave, like very similar to me. And he studied Buddhism and Stoicism, so two different types of philosophies. And he kind of combined them as he goes through this journey after writing down all these things that he doesn't want to do that would make him very uncomfortable, from like acupuncture to eating strange food to, you know, also mental challenges like learning a new language, like just things that were scaring him or that were uncomfortable or difficult that he's always wanted to do. And he wrote them all down, and he did them. He spent an entire year doing them, and then he wrote this book. And he basically picked the best ones to kind of have other people use this as a way of expanding their resilience and getting more uncomfortable. So I'm in the process of going through the book. The one thing it also has you do is write down the things that you want to do personally. So it's not just following the book, because there are some things in the book that I'm like, oh, I've already done this, like gone hiking. But then he also has, like, okay, if you've already done this, here's the extreme version of it. Go on a 3-day hike. You know, like, some of them are really, really crazy, and I don't know if I'm going to do everything.
Oh, my God. I would never
go. No, it sounds absolutely insane. I mean, I would, like, Megan, if you were, like, you wanted to go on a 3-day hike, I would go 3-day, like, we would do it together. Like, maybe I'd be down for that. I don't know if I'd go alone.
That's more of my, yeah, I would, if we were, like, doing it together, I think maybe, but like that is not something that I would ever do by
myself. No, there's a
hiking alone is actually a big fear of mine,
weirdly. I can only imagine. I mean, camping in general is a big fear of mine, but hey, it's on my list because I'm trying to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and just expanding myself a little bit more, because it is a rush when you force yourself to do something you don't want to do and are terrified you do it anyway. And I'll say I've only done one thing so far, but it's a lot of the stuff needs preparation and things like that. But the one thing that I have done is the first thing on the list is cold showers, and it's to take a cold shower and stay in there as long as you can handle. And the first time I did it, it was like one of those really early mornings. It was cold. It was like dead of winter. I was like, why am I doing this to myself? This is so stupid. And I turn on the shower, and it's, like, ice cold. And I just literally out loud say, just don't think about it, just do it. And I jumped in, and I just start laughing. Like honestly, like a crazy person. Because it's such a weird feeling, like an almost out-of-body experience to be, like, kind of, like, torturing yourself at the lowest level. And it's weirdly fun. I don't know. I don't know how much of this book I'm going to be doing, but it really, really inspired me and really is making me think about the things that I would normally dread to do and just immediately try to find a way to get out of, and if there's a way that maybe I could just get over it and stop being scared and just do it, and maybe I'll be laughing at the end.
I love that. Well, and honestly, I really, really love that you're bringing up, like, the cold showers. That's, like, one of those things that I feel like I've heard so often as being, like, one of the best ways to, like, get people out of their comfort zones, just because it is literally throwing you in a place of discomfort for no reason other than willing yourself to open up and try something new. Like, there's a whole, I think the guy's name is yes. Wim Hof, but it's, like, the whole, like, Wim Hof method is, like, based around, like, that, like, just, like, this idea of experiencing discomfort in, like, something that you have control over just so that, like, you will be more likely to do it in other places. And then I really want to, like, add on to that, that I hear, like, everything that you're saying, and the thing that I think is, like, really important is that, like, fear is very important, because, like, fear is something that comes from, like, just, like, a will to survive. And so I think that there is something, one, intelligent about, like, avoiding things that we're afraid of, because it comes from, like, just this, like, want in ourselves to, like, preserve ourselves. Like, you know, we don't want to get hurt. We don't want to die. We don't want to, like, have bad things happen. But there's also, like, this level of, like, you do get such a rush whenever you're kind of stepping outside of your comfort zones and, like, turning over control. And, like, in ziplining especially, I feel like is something that is honestly scarier to do than, like, most things. Like, you mentioned, like, me skiing. But, like, skiing is something that, like, I have spent years doing, so I know exactly what I'm doing. So, like, it's not really scary. But, like, something like a zipline, like, you are giving control over to something outside of yourself. And I think that that is so brave. And I think it's so cool that you're, like, exploring this.
That's interesting, because I thank you for saying that, but I think skiing is so much, not terrifying, but it just seems so much more uncomfortable than ziplining. Like, ziplining to me was, like, I knew I just had to make it across the water, and if I, for whatever reason, fell into the water, I could swim, you know? I mean, I'm not a good swimmer, like, I probably would drown, but, like, I probably would be able to make it to shore, like, worst case scenario. I knew the end and the beginning of, like, everything. I knew I just had to sit and just go. And so, yeah, there is a part, I guess, of giving up control. And with skiing, it's, like, it's all you. It's all your body. And it's all, like, the elements on top of that. And then there's other people, too. Like, because other skiers don't care. Like, from what I've heard from my friends who ski, is, like, they are not conscious of you. They're usually stoned. Like, they don't, they're not paying attention to what you're doing. So, for me, exploring fears is probably more about I have to give up that control rather than having control over something. Because that's, I don't know, that seems like a much more uncomfortable experience for me.
Well, I think that that also kind of speaks to, like, how it's not even just as simple as, like, there's a one-size-fits-all solution for, like, stepping outside of your comfort zone and, like, exploring yourself and getting these experiences. You're like, saying that, like, skiing sounds very uncomfortable. But, like, for me, it's, like, I know exactly what I'm doing and I know exactly what I need to do to not get hurt by doing it. Like, even, like, to the point of, like, I know how to, like, fall right if I'm gonna fall. And so, like, there's, like, levels to that where it's, like, I am very much in control of myself throughout that entire process. But I don't know that I could have ziplined over water. Like, I am actually, like, very afraid of water.
Really?
Like, yeah. I've been ziplining once before, but it was over trees. And there was, like, this level of, like, I was, like, honestly more comfortable over, like, doing that over, like, solid ground and trees and things like that. But, like, if it would have been over, like, the ocean, I can't even go in the ocean past my waist. Just because it's, like, there's, like, this level for me of, like, everything in the water is better adapted being in the water than I am. And so, like, I feel so out of place. Mm. So, like, honestly, like, you talking about this is making me want to get more comfortable with, like, swimming in, like, lakes and oceans.
Oh, my God. Well, maybe we'll do this book together and find, like, things to challenge ourselves, because it could be really fun. And I think both of us, and I don't want to speak for your, like, growing up experience, but my mom was really, really, like, overprotective of me and, like, didn't really let me do a lot of things. And if I didn't want to do something, she would just be like, yeah, you don't have to do it. It's fine. And she also, she's not a afraid person. She's a very brave person, but she also is very much like, doesn't like the outdoors, doesn't like to do anything too adventurous, like not really like that type of person. So I think it's also to do with like how you were raised. And like, I was raised by a mom who like terrified of heights, like absolutely, like, if I send her a picture of, like, me on a rooftop, she'll be like, don't go too close to the edge, like, Like, it's, and no, it's a, I don't mean to laugh, because it's a very real fear, fear of heights.
Oh, of course.
It's, I think because, you know, sometimes how you were raised, and if you weren't raised to be very brave and very, like, forced to do uncomfortable things, which I just wasn't, I don't, it's just because my mom wasn't like that, I think it could make you a little bit of a chicken, which is definitely me.
Well, that's, I honestly, like, I was raised, like, weirdly, like, similarly, but also in, like, the opposite way of, like, my parents were very much like, well, if you're gonna do something, like, you need to be good at it and everything. And so, like, there's, like, a level that comes with that of, like, I mean, I grew up in the woods, I grew up with chickens, I grew up, like, in more of, like, a farming kind of culture and things like that. And so it's, like, you know, like, I've been, like, going out and playing in the woods since I was a kid. But, like, I knew exactly what to do if, like, an animal came up or if, like, I cut my leg or, like, something like that. Like, it was, like, you know, like, you don't have to be afraid to do something if you know exactly what's happening. But I think that that speaks a lot to, like, why I'm so afraid of, like, water and everything. Because it's, like, I don't like to do things where I don't feel like I'm in control of the situation.
Like, you wouldn't know how to...
Like, I only... Like, I feel...
Like, you wouldn't know how to handle that situation, so you're not prepared for it, so it makes it scarier.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's, like, I like, even if, like, I seem brave because I do things that, like, I guess, like, quote-unquote, a brave person would do, like, I am only doing it because I have, like, read a book on it and, like, hit the, like, bunny slope a million to, like, practice or, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I very much, like, work up to doing...
You've gotten comfortable with being uncomfortable. You did it.
Well, yeah. Actually, yeah, I guess so. I want to do this book with you. I think this sounds so cool.
Let's do it. I'm glad that you're into it. Well, now I need to know what your inspiration is, Megan.
Do you find yourself struggling between the choices of playing the latest video games you got for Christmas or debating Aunt Fanny about religion over Christmas dinner?
Do you find yourself trying to work video games into your school papers, Sunday sermon, or next book proposal?
Do you wish you had more people to argue with about the hidden philosophical meaning of your favorite RPG?
Well then, nerds, we are the podcast for you!
No Avatars Allowed is a podcast about video games, theology, and all things cultural and intellectual.
Oh, and we talk about sex a lot, too.
Our hosts Rachel Dalton, Ben Wallace, and Joshua Wise figure out each week how on earth to cram video games into some kind of bigger discussion.
And mostly, we make it work.
Check us out every Saturday morning on allportsopen.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So grab your controller, that unused copy of Thomas Aquinas that's sitting on your shelf, maybe a negligee, and come join us for what is certain to be an interesting and strange conversation on No Avatars Allowed.
This might be, like, kind of weird and just, like, a me thing, but I have found a new love of, like, biopics recently. Like, just the kind of, like autobiographical films. And, like, specifically, like, two that I have, like, watched recently that I have absolutely, like, felt this, like, really cool connection with was, I watched Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie about Freddie Mercury. And then I watched, I Saw the Light, which is the Hank Williams biopic starring Tom Hiddleston. And if you know me or have ever heard me talk, you know that I'm basically just watching that because, like, just the idea of Tom Hiddleston in a cowboy hat is the sexiest thing I could ever think of. But it's just, like, it's been really, really cool because... There's something about, like, I mean, just to, like, start with, like, Queen, like, I mean, obviously they are, like, gods of rock and roll and everything, but, you know, it's so strange that, like, now, like, a lot of people associate their music, like, you know, like, Another One Bites the Dust or We Are the Champions or something with, like, high school football games or commercials or sometimes it pops up in, like, an Adam Sandler movie. Or, like, and just these very, like, kind of, like, quirkier aspects of your life. Whereas, like, they were such a groundbreaking alternative thing whenever they were coming up. Like, Freddie Mercury is an icon because he was such a groundbreaking artist, and it's so easy to, like, you know, like, hear about them after the fact and, like, everything that they've influenced and not realize what an impact that they made on things. Which, and there was, like, something about watching that was so cool about, like, being able to kind of, like, it almost felt like getting to, like, experience this point in time that I missed out on just because I wasn't born for it. Which was, like, very, very neat. And they have, like, at the end of that movie, they do this, like, I mean, it is literally just, like, a shot-for-shot imitation of Freddie Mercury's Live Aid performance, which was, I think it was his last performance before he passed away from AIDS. So, I mean, it's just, like, this beautiful moment of, like, essentially getting to, like, see this man, like, on, like, at the end of his life, like, putting everything he can into a performance. And, you know, it's something that I never would have gotten to see otherwise if it hadn't been for this film. And it was just, like, it was so incredible to, like, essentially, like, almost get to live through a moment of history that I missed. And so, like, I was already kind of, like, feeling a connection with that. And then I was kind of, like, on a little bit of, like, a kick, and I knew that Tom Hiddleston was in the Hank Williams biopic, and so I wanted to watch that too, and it's him and Elizabeth Olsen, and the acting is just amazing. But it was also, like, again, like, this level of, you know, I grew up, like, listening to Hank Williams, but it was because, like, it was on, like, the oldies country stations that, like, I would listen to with my grandparents whenever we were going out to, like, the cattle barns and, like, flea markets and stuff like that. So it was, like, very much, like, oh, that's that old country guy. Whereas, like, watching this movie and, like, seeing, like, oh my gosh, like, Hank Williams was a total heartthrob whenever he was, like, new and everything. And, like, and it's just, like, this, like, really cool thing of, like, kind of getting to experience something that, like, was, like, he was essentially, like, you know, like, I had, like, pictures of Aaron Carter all over my wall whenever I was a kid, and my little sister is obsessed with Harry Styles and, like, One Direction right now, and it was just, like, so cool to, like, get to, like, I guess, like, kind of, like, watch that and, like, realize, like, oh my god, like, my mama probably had posters of him up in her room. Like, you know, like, the reason that, like, I am watching him, like, watching this film because of Tom Hiddleston, because I'm, like, super, like, crushing on this celebrity. Like, my mama probably was doing the same thing with Hank Williams whenever she was, like, younger. Which, I don't know, like, it was just, like, see that, like, film can, like, not only, like, share these stories, but, like, it feels like it can almost, like, transport us back in time in a weird way and, like, give us a new appreciation for these things.
Absolutely. I mean, I love what you're saying about your grandmother and, like, the connection to Hank Williams that, you know, and then your connection to Tom Hiddleston, because it does, it makes it come full circle in a really cool, like, beautiful way. And, you know, there might even be a world where, you know, someone, like, years from now, Tom Hiddleston has a documentary, and then, like, that, you know, it's, like, it's a really cool, like, just idea of time, I think, and the way time develops and morphs and how we get these little reminders of the past, and I think that's really, really beautiful. I'm not the biggest biopic fan, but the ones that I do like are usually ones that are, like, not at all true or, like, very exaggerated. I read a lot of, like, just, like, scripts that never got published, and one of my favorite ones that I read is this pilot about Anna Wintour and the editor and the editor-in-chief at the time of Vanity Fair. And they apparently had this huge feud, like, historical feud back then, and it's just all about their feud and, like, Vogue versus Vanity Fair and, like, them fighting over photo shoots and, like, and I'm sure some of this stuff has actually happened. And it's cool because in the script, they actually had, like, photos from, like, certain moments. Like, this is the moment that it happened. And then it, like, describes the scene afterwards, which I thought was a really cool touch. But, I mean, the thing with biopics is, like, it's that weird fine line between, like, rewriting history and telling history, though. So I know, like, I totally hear what you're saying, where it, like, it is preserving history in a beautiful way, but it also is rewriting it in a way, too. Like, I know a lot of people are mad about certain aspects of the Queen, how he was portrayed and things like that. So I think it's just so difficult to capture a whole person and their whole life and how complicated it is in a film and like a really truthful way. So I like the biopics that just fully lean into just this is an exaggerated version, some of these events are true type of situation.
No, absolutely. Well, and there's also like levels to like, you know, like life is very complicated, and so it's very hard to like, I mean, essentially just like make it narrative. Like it's so hard to like translate life into film and into books and into TV shows. But I think that there is something so incredible about like the idea that like I think that maybe it's more of that art is like such an incredible tool for not necessarily preserving these moments in time, but preserving the ways that people felt in them. But it's just like this level of like capturing what it was like to just like be alive at like a specific point. And I feel like it's just such a beautiful connector for all of us. And just like this, because I also like, I'm a really big fan of like Mad Men is a show that I absolutely love. And of course they like, you know, like, change things for the sake of narrative. Or I think maybe even, like, Hamilton is, like, a really good example of, like, you know, it's, like these things that, like, we read about in history books or we hear about in, like, these, like, very, like, short, like, did you know that this thing happened one time? And it just kind of, like, expands it so that, like, we really get the feeling that we maybe missed out on just because we were born in a certain time.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really cool.
That's a really good point, because it is true where when you just read, like, a historical fact, you're just like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But when you see it and you're actually able to feel it, how it's actually happening, it does give it more weight and more levity. So I do think biopics kind of put an importance on certain aspects of history. So, yeah, I really love that you brought that up.
Thank you. No, and I love yours. I'm going to put that book in the show notes, because I think that that's so cool, and I think that's something that our listeners would really resonate with.
If anyone starts taking cold showers, please let me know, because if you start, I want to know if, like, your reactors start laughing like a maniac, like I was, because I felt like a crazy person, but it was so much fun.
Okay, so I do have to ask, like, are you going to do the polar bear plunge now or anything like that?
Maybe. Probably not. I mean, listen, everything comes in levels. Let me get to the point where I can do like a 10-minute like cold shower, and then we'll talk.
All right, well, and listeners, if you were wondering why we are like giggling like maniacs and like feeling so inspired lately, it is literally because we talked to our guest. So I hope that she inspires you as much as she did us. This woman is like a modern shaman. So, now presenting Nikki Lachey.
Cue the applause.
All right, so we're here with actress, writer, producer, dancer, entertainment tech co-founder, and philanthropist Nikki Lachey. You may know her from any of her incredible films, such as Soul Ties, The Interlude, Superwoman, Him, or Unfold. You may know her from her incredible work with Homeward Live or The Love Effect. You may know her from Clubhouse, or you may have seen her dance at the Fox Theater behind Diggy Simmons or on Scary Movie 5. From film sets to stage to every platform available, she is everywhere and such a powerhouse of a multi-hyphenate lady. And we are so excited. She is beauty, she is grace, and she is here with us right now. How are you doing, Nikki?
I am so good. Thank you guys for having me here. I'm super, super excited.
We have so much to talk to you about, but I would actually really, really love to just start with your films. You have directed and written and like acted in so many of these, and I would just really, really love to know, where do you get the ideas for these? Like, what inspires you to want to create? I mean, I feel like a lot of us performers are so happy to like be a part of storytelling, but you are literally like leading the force behind it.
Oh man. Yeah. So I just feel like I'm very much influenced, as I think all artists are. I'm very much influenced by life. And sometimes just what you take in is just, it's so strong that it has to be, you are fueled to create it on a, in a greater capacity. So like I'll receive scripts as an actor, but then it's just so powerful that I can't wait for a script. Now the words are flowing through me on paper, and that enables, you know, an artist to create on multiple levels or on a bigger level. And, you know, then that motivated me to actually, you know, create a film because I felt so strongly about the story needing to be told. And it's like the artist's conviction, you know, if you will. And I think artists, true creatives, feel very much a responsibility to tell certain stories, some stronger than others. So yeah, that's what I'd say about that.
No, I love it. Well, especially because I feel like that's such a big part of the conversation about the creative process is just like, why does this need to be made? And I love kind of your take on it where it's this story needs to exist and nobody's telling it. So I guess that if it's on my heart, it's going to be me, which I think is so cool that it's almost like, I don't know, like, I guess like there's something that's almost like, it's almost like coming out of you. Like the stories, which is really amazing.
Yeah, I like to say that we don't own any of this like material. We are just vessels. Like as artists, it's not me. So whenever I get credit for this work, and sometimes I'll write something and I'll exhale, then I'll look back and I'll be amazed that I wrote that, and it can't be me. Something like this, so profound, so layered. You know, I've only been here so many years, and so I'm just very, very thankful. And I aim to just honor the ability to be a storyteller. I think it's a profound gift. And yeah, I just aim to respect it because I feel like it allows people to just connect and to understand and to heal and to laugh and to share and joy.
Yeah, I really love that you're bringing up this whole idea of stories kind of coming through you without almost having control, that they're kind of like coming from this other source. And one thing that I always, because like whenever I'm kind of dealing with that or have these ideas in certain areas, I kind of am like, okay, like how much of this is me and how much of it is just kind of the universe speaking through me, so to speak. And then the rewrites happen too. So how do you deal with kind of staying true to what the universe is telling you as much as also what yourself is telling you the story needs to be? And in addition to that, going through those rewrite processes and those next drafts and that type of thing. I mean, is there a big rewrite process for the stories that you write and tell?
Not really. And I totally get that. But I think that it leans on what you lean on. And so if you lean on like the industry standard of things or like, you know, like school telling you what a structure should be, or if you lean on your creative genius, if you will, then that's kind of the root of the piece. And I honestly always feel that the creative genius is always going to be heavier because these structures and whatnot came about after the creative influence, after the creative genius. Basically, the energy in which you create is the energy that people are going to receive your work. And so it's just very important to honor and respect that. And so for me, what I do is I just aim to be honest, you know, in my work, and I don't anchor it into like people's, like there, I have writing mentors and just mentors in every category. However, and then I know the energy in which it was created, and I didn't feel it necessary to change my style simply because it didn't sync up to what another writer thought it should be. And I think you have to honor your own creative gifts. And that's really why we have artists that stand out, because they honor their own creative gifts. And I likened, you know, I guess my style, if you will, to Shakespeare, where his language is complex, but it allows you to see the beauty of language. And because the reader can take in the beauty of language, the actor can also internalize that language and I guess present it from a more honest space. Like like nothingness is changed because it's complex or because, you know, maybe people may think it's not standard, if you will. Like you have to honor your creative gift and not, I think you'll feel when a rewrite is necessary. Like sometimes I'll read things over and then I'll be organically influenced to expound upon something, but, or add to something or shift this, but the core of the idea never shifts for me. And I truly believe that it's because I honored the influence instead of the, oh, I have to go with what's trending right now and this, that, and the other, because it has no roots, you know, when you do it that way. Yeah. So that'll be what I say to that.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that you're saying that, because I feel like there are so many things that are, you know, like, I mean, you learn in school, you read the books, like you take the classes, and there are so many people who are telling you like, this is the right way to do something. But whenever it comes to the creative process, I think that you're absolutely right. I think that it comes from being moved to tell a story and to tell it in a way that has the meaning that you're trying to portray. And so I would love to hear, I guess, what your masterclass is on writing. I mean, like, what is your writing process like? I mean, are there any specific things that help you, I guess, like get in the mood or to kind of like process your thoughts to get them down on paper? I mean, I guess in a Word document now in like technical age.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I found it very important to just set the energy, you know, for the space, like set the energy for your space, your working space. So I know for me, I enjoy hookah and, you know, refreshments and some snacks and candles and,
ooh.
And so I'll just set the tone for that. I'll create a very relaxed space. I'll meditate, you know, before I sit to write. I want to clear my head. I want to be a clear vessel, you know, so that things can flow through me and so that I'm not overthinking or thinking myself out of the organic process. And so, you know, I think you should just make it fun. Like it has been on my heart recently, like I want to travel more. And so I'd like to write on the beach, you know, just take my laptop or my journal and just sit on the sand, watch the ocean and see what comes, you know, or work on this script, you know. I'd like to go to a cabin and look at the stars and the moon and see what comes. And I feel like you just have to, you know, there's no set way, but then I honestly don't think there should be. Just like every story has a different genre and a different flow, I believe that what assists you and telling that story or allowing those words to flow through you will also shift, you know, like the mood I'm in when I'm telling the story of an African queen who was a warrior is going to be different than the mood I'm in when I'm telling the story of a relationship that ends in some kind of betrayal or heartbreak. You know, it'll just be different, the mood. And so I would tell anybody, you know, if you want to create, make sure you set the tone for it, you know, make sure you are giving yourself things or tools, whether that be food or hookah like me or wine even, that make you comfortable, that bring you some joy and satisfaction, because then that's going to clear space. It's going to make room for words to flow through you.
Yeah. No, this is, I can't say enough. Like you have the most don't get me wrong, you're gorgeous, but you have like the most gorgeous mind, because I feel like you have tapped into something with your storytelling that almost takes it back to its roots. Like there's something almost like shamanistic about the way that you're talking about this, that's it makes me think of like, you know, since we've been able to tell stories, like it's like, you know, this whole like sitting around the campfire and just like conveying this knowledge and experience to others that I feel like you've really tapped into, that I think that not to like comment on other people's writing styles, but that I think has kind of been lost in the art form, where like it is a very structured thing now. Like, you know, like we have like the hero's journey and we have like story arc structure and things like that. But when it comes down to it, like I feel like you are speaking to not even like the way to tell stories, but just why we tell them in the first place. And I think that that is absolutely incredible. So I guess like before we move on to the other things that you do, because you have a lot of other things to talk about, is there any like advice or anything that I guess that you would want to give to other people who are not even necessarily writers, but just in the storytelling industry?
Oh yeah, for sure. For any creator is definitely know who you are, you know who you are before you pursue anything. That way you will know how to present yourself. You'll know the type of stories you want to tell. You won't be subject to the business aspects of things that, you know, may make it a sour experience for you. But when you know who you are, this journey is beautiful. You know, even those hiccups, it becomes such a small part of the journey because you're creating from an authentic space and you're telling the stories you want to tell, and you are open to experience, you know, beautiful and positive and fulfilling relationships because you are walking from a grounded, you know, space instead of just kind of relying on everything else outside of you to tell you who you are. And a lot of people don't think about that. They get so caught up in, you know, pursuing the dream, if you will, but the dream is anchored in you, and you need to be anchored in you, else your dream just flies away from you. And then people get to, you know, implant their own, you know, dreams in you and use you for what they want you to be used for. So I would say just know who you are before you walk out here and start navigating things. And then as you navigate, follow your intuition, like honor that and continue to sharpen it. And I believe artists are some of the most gifted people when it comes to intuition. You know, our senses are just so heightened, and we need to continue to nurture that by listening to it, by allowing it to breathe through our art, whether we're acting or writing or directing or editing. Allow your senses to continue to be sharpened by letting it live through your art, and always, you know, like creators must create. Don't let the world trick you into thinking that, you know, you should only do these things. You know, we have been blessed with so many different tools because of technology to continue to create, and we don't have to wait for someone else to give us permission to do so. You have to create because you are a creator. It's like breathing. You have to breathe because, you know, you're alive and walking around. So it only strengthens you to continue to flex that creative muscle, and it keeps you in alignment with everything that you see for yourself as far as career is concerned. So yes, know who you are first and foremost. Continue to cultivate that relationship, and then always be creating, like literally, like whether you're writing, whether you put together something small on social media, like whether you do a monologue and post it on your story, just continue to create, exercise yourself, because that's literally what you're here to do. That's, you know, continue to work that muscle so it doesn't weaken on you, or so you don't experience atrophy, you know.
Before any of this, you actually started off as, I mean, not only a performer, but a dancer, which I think is so amazing. You're also the first dancer we've ever had on our show, so that's awesome. But how did you get into dance?
Yeah, I have just always been in art. I took an interest, but you know, my family couldn't afford extracurriculars. So when I was like, I think like 12, I would Google, you know, ballet and go down the rabbit hole, and then I would watch these videos that, you know, of these dancers doing these moves. And so I would just practice it in our living room, And until I was old enough to get a job when I was 16 or 17. And then I got my first job at Wendy's, and then I, you know, signed up for dance classes. And by the time I got there, they thought I had been taking ballet for years. So it's amazing how your passion always makes a way for you, you know? And so that's how I started dancing. And then after that, I went to Georgia State and studied there. And then a couple of studios that became my home, got a Dance Atlanta, which is not here anymore, but that was my dance home for a while. And then Dance 401 was my second home. And then I was able to book some pretty, pretty cool gigs. And that actually gave me a nice padding for my theatrical resume. So it was a very, very fun experience. Yeah, got to perform at the Fox Theater behind Dougie Simmons and Jacob Lattimore, you know, Volkswagen commercial, toured with the Neo Soul Circus and Three Stooges, Scary Movie 5, The Identical. You know, I got to work on all these huge sets as a professional dancer, a special performer, and created a lot of cool work, you know, as a result. I taught at the Atlanta Ballet. I toured with a salsa troupe called Pasifino Dance Company. And, you know, I just really dove in there.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I am curious, as a completely non-dancer, I classify myself as barely a mover. Is there any difference between dancing for like a live performance, like for stage, and a set?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. For when you do live performances, it's much more strenuous because, you know, you have one shot to get it right. And just like in acting, you know, theater, you have one shot to get it right. You have to give it all on the floor. There's no cut. And of course, it's much more taxing on the body because you're doing a full out performance with, you know, no breaks. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely different. And whereas in film or, you know, industrials or commercials, or even movies, it's just to create aesthetic more so, you know, so 9 times out of 10, you don't have to do like full out routines over and over. That's like more music videos and things of that nature. Or if it was something like Honey, you know, but even then, you know, they're cutting and resetting and whatnot. So, yeah, dance in film and dance in theater are different in those ways. Theater, you hit the stage and you are going for that hour and a half to 2 hours with intermission. And that's pretty much it.
I guess I'm wondering, is there anything from your days as a dancer that like you feel has carried over to these other aspects of a creative, or do you think that they kind of remain separate?
Oh yeah, for sure. All of the foundational lessons of all of these practices or disciplines are relevant to each other. So I would say discipline and just leaving it all on the stage. You know, I could say that as a dancer, I can say that as an actress. You get out there, you can't, you know, lack confidence, because when you lack confidence, it influences your performance. So you have to get out there, go big, and not think about it. Just live and tell the story using your body or using your voice, you know, when you're acting. And I definitely took that with me from the dance stage to the acting, you know, set or the film set.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amazing. And well, and you've also made the move into, I guess, more of like the more social media performative areas as well. I know that you're big on Clubhouse. I guess I would actually really like if you could just kind of describe, that's not exactly what I want to say. Let me rephrase that. I would really love it if you could kind of like tell our listeners a little bit about Clubhouse, just because I feel like it is kind of one of the newer things for everyone. So like, if you could just kind of like tell everybody a little bit about it, and then also what you're doing on it.
Oh yeah. So Clubhouse was created by a couple of guys from Silicon Valley, and it is a invite only, you know, social app. And because it was invite only, it created a pretty cool tone where a lot of industry executives and high level folks would get on and communicate. And, but it's growing so big now. It's kind of becoming like Facebook and Instagram, but where, I have found a way to continue to create, especially, you know, with, you know, COVID still, you know, working its way, you know, through, is absolutely a network called, Clubhouse TV Network. So CHTV, created by myself and, well, Diana Copeland conceptualized the idea and I helped her to develop it. And so we're co-founders on this entertainment tech network, and we have found a way to curate original content as well as create original content by Clubhouse artists that are already on Clubhouse, and we perform it on Clubhouse for the Clubhouse community. And it's just a fun way to create a virtual stage, if you will, for people to be entertained and for artists to still have a stage to perform on in a time where not many artists are performing and, you know, everybody's still trying to find their way. And some really amazing things are happening. We just finished a 24-hour audiothon, a new term there. And it benefited the Global Giving Organization's COVID Relief Fund. So we partnered with those guys and Terry Crews came by. We also had Black History tributes to Cicely Tyson and Chadwick Boseman. And Terry Crews came by to honor Chadwick Boseman and drop through and showed us love. And we had Leigh Lamar, who's a pretty popular comedian on the app. And we had a wonderful political figure come in and be interviewed. Her name is Laura Gastner. And she's been just everywhere on all of these networks, CSNBC, things of that nature. And so yeah. it was a positive and giving experience. We had creators from all over the world, Poland, Finland, Germany, Japan, Hawaii, all across the US, you know, New York, LA and Atlanta and Detroit. It was just really amazing, really fulfilling. We took 2 months and just went hard at it every day with rehearsals and, you know, just learning about technology along the way, you know, and our production rather, how to use technology in production where you only use your voice. And just to continue to create, even though the theaters are shut down. And, you know, I think that that's a testament to the artists and a testament to the importance of continuing to storytell. And so we're going into monthly programming right now. So make sure you guys check out the website, clubhousetvnetwork.com. You can learn a little bit more about the network there and upcoming dates. And also we have a club on Clubhouse. So CHTV Network, join us there.
Well, and we will definitely include all that in the show notes for sure. And I really just want to say that I think that it's amazing that you guys are doing that. I mean, just one, because there's a level of, it's something that I feel like comes up a lot on this podcast specifically, is the idea that like even a worldwide pandemic can't stop creatives from just creating. Like if you take away one thing, people just find another way to do it. And that's amazing. And I love that you guys are doing it to not only like give a stage to creatives, but also just to keep things moving, which is amazing. And like to use it to give back to people as well. Janelle?
Yeah. I mean, I've been on Clubhouse a little bit here and there, and I think it's such an amazing app. And the fact that you're using it in this way is really fascinating, because the thing is with Clubhouse is you get access to everybody. It's like, it kind of took away the kind of social hierarchy that we have on Instagram and Facebook and all these things, and Twitter even, where these people aren't accessible, and it's like kind of making them accessible at all levels. So it's really, really great for creators of, you know, all levels to just connect and network and stuff like that. So I think the fact that you're utilizing the platform in this way to kind of like uplift these voices and these stories and these people who may not have gotten a chance to have a platform, I think is amazing. And I'm very curious what your thoughts are though, when the app does become public. Like, how are you excited about that? Are you nervous? I feel like a lot of people have mixed thoughts. So I'm kind of curious, you know, where you kind of see the future of the network on Clubhouse.
Well, yeah, you know, the app it's hard for me to say because I'm still a user, even though like I've been privy to certain information being a Clubhouse creator, if you will. I think that our focus as CHTV is to, we wanted to allow the app just to be what it is. And it's a way to engage with people and to foster relationships. And we have discussions with certain people off the app that will allow the network to continue to live on, and that will present opportunities that will allow us to take care of our staff and take care of our performers. And so we're just focused on continuing to grow off the app, as Clubhouse hasn't yet presented ways to monetize, but I think that they're figuring out their structure. But in the meantime, we are so excited and happy to at least provide entertainment and to allow people the stages to, well, the virtual stage, like I said before, to showcase their work, you know, and not sit around and wait, you know, just to find joy in continuing to create and perform. And in the meantime, we'll still keep doing our monthly performances on Clubhouse. But we will have some announcements here soon about other ways that you can hear or see, you know, or both content from CHTV Network.
That's really exciting. I'm very excited to watch you grow with the app and with the network, because I think it's going to be, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people are utilizing Clubhouse in a lot of different ways, but I haven't heard of anybody doing this. So this is a really groundbreaking thing.
Well, there's something so cool about the way that you are kind of finding your way into all of these different mediums and not becoming a part of them, but like bringing a part of you to them that I think is amazing. I also really want to talk about Homeward Live and the Love Effect. You do so much incredible work for charity. Do you want to talk about those organizations or those projects?
Absolutely. So the Love Effect is a charity that I founded about 7 years ago in Atlanta, Georgia. And it started actually a few years before that. I would just go downtown and give out, you know, extras from bookings that I would have, or, you know, just go to stores and buy some things and make sandwiches and get some hygienic supplies. And then I started inviting people to do it with me. And then it just became a thing, and I made it official and called it Help for the Holidays. Because, you know, the holidays is usually a time where people, you know, around family. But then, you know, you see people in the streets who may not have family to be around. And my heart just went out to them. And I thought that how cool would it be to just spend time or to fellowship with people who may not feel loved or who may not feel fellowship around this time. And so we make care bags, which is, you know, what I've called them. And we, the staple is love letters. So every care bag has a handwritten love letter from a volunteer. And it's just a message of love and empowerment and encouragement. It comes from a great, like, loving place, an honest place. And when people read those love letters, it's just, I can't even describe it, just to see the wave of emotion that people experience when they read those love letters. And some cry and some are just, they smile deeply. And, you know, because when those donations run out, just knowing that somebody cares about you, loves you, wants you to survive, believes in you, that feeling doesn't. And I remember one time a woman said that she wanted to die. Like, she was wanting to kill herself. And just hearing like what reading that letter did for her, you know, it just did something to all of us, you know, that day. And so, you know, and then also you get to laugh with people, you know, it's not just about, you know, handing out things and, you know, it's about like creating normalcy, you know, about communicating with people and how we're all like one step away from glory or tragedy. And so our best bet is just to love each other the little bit of time we have here. And so, we gather together, people bring donations, hygienic items, and, we stuff those bags. We have male specific bags, female specific bags, and then we have children's bags now. And we hit the streets and we walk around and we asked people if they even want a bag. And then we talk and we learn more about people, where they're from, what they like, what their dreams are. You know, sometimes you find out some really cool things about people. And then we just, you know, go on our way. And then, and then Homeward LA was an initiative that I was brought on board as an assistant director in Los Angeles. And they're huge. They do something really, really cool. They do a staged reading, a kickoff. Well, over 50 teams or 50 production teams do stage readings across the LA area to benefit Homeward or the Midnight Mission. And Homeward LA is the facilitator of that. And, you know, they work to service the population of homeless people there. LA has a really tough or challenging issue with people living on the streets. There is a housing crisis there. And so it's really tough. And so I was just happy to use my art to assist. And that was a pretty cool and rewarding experience.
No, that's incredible. And I mean, honestly, just, I'm a little bit speechless. That's really, really amazing. Everything that you're doing and that they're doing. And just, I mean, thank you for, you know, all the help that you're providing to people.
Yeah. Just everybody, just make sure you check out the loveeffectworldwide.org. And if you're interested in volunteering or donating, please feel free to stop by and connect there. And of course, you guys can connect with me and learn more about my happenings on my social media. It's just my name, Nikki Lachey, and look forward to making some cool announcements about, you know, future films and projects.
Amazing. All right. Well, and I also we always play a game with our guests. This is a little bit of a surprise, but we have like a very easy game that we're going to play. But before we do, I do just have to bring up, so you and Janelle know each other, right? Or you guys have worked together, right?
Yeah. So I was a model in a photo shoot that Nikki was a creative director, and I just want to tell a quick story about like that experience, because Nikki, like, she blew me away, honestly. And then she talks a lot about knowing yourself, and that is 100% her presence. She is so grounded, so confident, and knows what she wants. Like, as a model, you never really know what you're going to get when you go to sets. And this was a little bit of a difficult set to work on because it was outdoors. We were literally like laying on rocks. We were in the trees. Like, it was a beautiful, beautiful location, beautiful shots, don't get me wrong. But it was like one of those experiences where in the wrong hands, it could have been just chaos. And Nikki was so clear, 100% the whole time, very directive. She was in the rocks with us. She was like doing all the moves with us. She knew exactly what she wanted, exact poses, exact moments. She was working with a photographer, and she was able to wear so many different hats that day. I was just absolutely very impressed by her and impressed by just her vision. Just, she knew what she wanted and she knew how to get it. And she was just an incredible director that day. So that's honestly why I wouldn't have her on, because I was like, if maybe our listeners can get some of this confidence and some of this knowing yourself, because that is what sometimes you need on set. You need that voice of reason who has the vision and is able to execute it. So thank you for that, Nikki.
That's awesome. That is a high compliment, you know, coming from, you know, you who took direction so wonderfully and were so graceful, you know, on set. So thank you for being a great model. But yeah, that's wonderful to hear. Thank you so much. You know, you go out and you do things and you don't know how you impact people, but you know, I just try to, you know, set a great tone, you know, foundationally for the experience, and approach it with a pure heart of, you know, of creative energy, so that everybody can receive something grand from the experience. So that makes me feel very, very good to hear that. Thank you, Janelle.
Well, good. And yeah, we definitely had that experience on set where everyone left feeling so full and so creatively just joy. And like you said, it's about fun. And even though we were like lying on rocks and like getting hit by like trees. It was still a blast. So, and it was because of Nikki.
No, I think that that's amazing. And I think that that's like the big takeaway is I think that we can all just like learn and be better people if we can find the same kind of just like trust in ourselves that Nikki, you seem to just have, which is absolutely beautiful. So,
wait, sorry, I actually have one more question because,
yeah, absolutely.
I will be a little vulnerable here and I will say trust in myself is something that I sometimes struggle with. So, like, Nikki, is this something you have always had, this confidence, this trust in yourself, or is it something that you had to work on? And, like, what ways, if so?
Oh, yeah, I definitely had to work on that. I mean, and I slipped so many times. I suffered so many times just because of my own like self-limiting beliefs and trusting other people more than myself, their opinions of me, their perception of me more than myself. And I think that after so many missed opportunities, so much of just not being in alignment because I didn't even believe that maybe I was worthy of it or that I was talented enough for it, you just get tired and you realize how short life is. And so you just try something different. And then that trying something different yields you a different result. And, you know, as you get deeper in the industry, you realize that you really have, all you have is really your belief in yourself. That's all you have. And nobody else can believe in you or will believe in you until you do. And once you believe in yourself, no matter what it is, then people start looking at you because you magnetize yourself. And you magnetize yourself to opportunities, to people who want to help you, to people who believe in you, because they now can see you. It's almost like it's like the sun refusing to shine. You know, first of all, the sun does itself a disservice because the sun is like so like powerful. Like, look at what it does. Like, it gives us vitamin D. It grows things. It keeps us warm. It illuminates the world, you know, and the sun, what if the sun didn't realize how powerful it was? And then look at how many people and things would suffer because it didn't realize its own power. And that's really the sentiment that each one of us should hold, because there are a lot of people that suffer because we don't realize our own light. There are a lot of paths that we don't illuminate because we refuse to shine. And so it's almost like, just know that your life is so much bigger than you. And just know that your presence means a lot to someone else, you know, because once you give yourself permission to shine, then you also, you being that also gives someone else permission to shine too. Someone is always looking at you, whether it be a younger sister, a little girl, somebody watching you on TV, you know, somebody listening to you speak. You just never know. You never know. And so, but at the same time, it's not really your concern either. I just think that, you know, whatever you believe in, you know, and even if you believe in, you know, quote unquote, nothing, there's a reason why you're here. You're not here for no reason at all. And I think that when you think about just that simple fact, like that alone means that you're here to do some work, some good, something. And that was enough for me to start the journey of saying, well, this is something that came to me as an idea and it came to me for a reason. So let me just move on it. And so I do a lot of things afraid, or, and I don't mean I do them in fear, but I do them maybe through a fear or through a limiting belief. Excuse me. So even if something creeps up, I do it harder because I know that it means that it has to come out, you know? So that's the first thing I do, is if I'm afraid to do it, then I go, okay, I got to do this now, you know? And then, so there's that, do it afraid, you know, push through that, and see what you're capable of. Like, your ceiling is only low because you don't know how tall you can stand. And so once you stand up, you'll realize that there's more space above you. And then you'll start climbing a ladder and then you're like, oh, wow, there's more space. So just be curious about, you know, how much you can do. And then also, like, I kind of think about the end of my life, and not in a morbid sense, but just like when I am near the end of my days, you know, I don't want to look back and say, man, like I really could have done this. Or I don't want to be older and not able to be, you know, able to be physically able as I am now, or as quick as I am now, or as resourceful as I am now. I want to use everything that I have right now to get me to the next stage of things. And so like, why act if I'm not going to do it completely and fully and really see what this thing can yield, you know? Why, you know, create charity if I'm not going to maximize it and see how many people this vehicle can help, you know? Frankly, why be alive if I'm not going to do anything with my life? If I'm just going to sit here and watch TV and shrink and be small and hide in a corner and be socially awkward and think that nobody like, you know, wants to hear my voice. Why? What's the point? You're here because there is a point. There's a point for you to be here. And you just need to put one foot in front of the other and ask questions to the universe, and the answers will come. Continue to follow your heart, continue to follow your intuition, continue to honor yourself, and continue to cultivate your spirit and grow in every way that you can, and expand yourself and push past, you know, discomfort and push through fear. And there is always something on the other side of that, something greater.
That's incredible.
I'm gonna like take this part of the podcast and record it and listen to it like every day.
Yeah.
Like, that was amazing, Nikki. Like, you are meant to like be like a motivational like speaker. Like, I'm sure you already have done that, but like, that was really, really incredible and the perfect answer. And honestly, what I needed to hear tonight. So thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. Well, I haven't done any motivational speaking, but I'm open to see where things lead. And that is, you know, me following my light as well, you know, so just me, you know, if it was on my heart to say, and I said it, just like it was on your heart to ask that question. And that right there is a testament to how we just need to keep honoring our intuition. And then there was some magic that came out of this experience with us right here, you know, on this medium here. And it served all of us, even me.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's safe to say that if you start becoming an emotional speaker or an emotional speaker, motivational speaker, me and Janelle will be the first ones to sign up 100%. But really, I can't thank you enough. This has been extraordinary, and you were just such an inspiring and illuminating person. And I can't thank you enough for coming on. And I feel very silly, but we do still have to play a game with you. So if you are okay with playing our fun little silly game before we jump off.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So basically it's very, very simple. So you're just going to pick a number between 1 and 10. That number is associated with a question. Some of them are very silly. Some of them are very deep. And you just have to agree to answer it no matter what it is.
All right. Let's go.
All right. Any number you like?
Oh, okay. 6.
Ooh, what's your favorite animal?
Horses. I love horses.
Oh, why horses?
I've been riding since I was little, and I just think they're just so fascinating and beautiful. And when I'm with them, you know, I get so much peace, and they're so intelligent, and they have so much personality, and they're just, gosh, they're such big and strong creatures, but they're intuitive as well, you know, as far as how they handle humans.
Can I ask, like, what was your like early horse riding experience like?
Well, in Mississippi on my great granddad's farm in Scuba, that's where I learned to ride. And then it was some years. And then when I was a teenager, I volunteered at Bible camp. And then I volunteered at this horse ranch in Snellville, where I went to school, high school. And there I would teach kids with muscular dystrophy how to ride, teach them commands while they worked with their physical therapist. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Amazing. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, seriously, I really just can't thank you enough for coming on. This has been Everyone's gonna love this. I can't thank you enough. You are just an incredible person, and you are literally put on this earth to tell stories and inspire people. And I really, really mean that.
Thank you so very much. That means a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, we are going to include all of the links to everything that you do on the show notes and everything so everyone can find you. But again, thank you so much. And I'm Megan Martin, and I've been Megan Martin, and Janelle Megan has been Janelle Megan, and Nikki has been, I don't even know what to call you, just absolutely incredible. Thank you again so much. Everybody say bye.
Bye. Bye.
Cause and Creation is an All Ports Open Network podcast. You can follow us at cause_and_creation on Instagram. You can follow Megan Martin on Instagram at @HelloMeganMartin and me, Janelle Megan, on Instagram and Twitter at @JanelleMegan. And if you'd like to support our network or just support the show, you can head on over to Patreon at patreon.com/allportsopen. Thanks for listening.